Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tux Lerzel.
And Stephanie Domingo.
We are back at it for season 5. It's a big day. Very exciting.
Yeah.
5 years of this.
What?
That's wild.
Pandemic years don't count.
I know, right? We just started. We're babies.
Yeah.
Me baby. We come to you from Detroit, Michigan today.
Yeah.
Where we are recording on land belonging to the Ojibwe, Ottawa, Potawatomi, and Wyandot nations. A bunch of nations that are still very much out here doing their thing, and we would like to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
For those of you who may have forgotten over the summer, Beyond Reproach is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Sure enough.
And as per usual, we be drinking and we be swearing.
Yes. See our last email.
Yes.
Per our last email.
Yes. Yes. So today, we're drinking a very fancy cocktail that was invented sometime around the early 1900s, around the turn of the 20th century.
Ooh.
By a female bartender named Ada Coley Coleman.
I love that.
Yes.
That's so good.
It's so good. It's amazing. Yeah.
So early.
Yes. She worked at this like world famous and still famous world renowned bar called the American Bar at the Savoy Hotel in London.
Oh, in London. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
And
international.
Yeah. It was really rare to see female bartenders, and she was actually the head bartender
at what?
The American Bar. Yes.
Bitch. You better work.
Yes. The bartendress. And, you know, Coley made quite a name for herself. She was the head bartender for over 20 years.
Oh, my God.
At the American Bar. Yeah.
Wow. So when did she start?
1903.
Wow.
Yes, 1903.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Yeah. She loved coming up with new recipes, but the Hanky Panky is the most famous cocktail she ever came up with. They still have it on the menu at the American Bar to this day.
Wow.
We don't know the exact year that it was created. Some people say 1903, but that was when she first started. So yeah. I feel like it was probably a few years after that.
Okay. Perfect for my story.
Yeah.
In like every way. You Amazing. Don't even know.
We do know that she came up with the drink basically for a famous London stage actor named Sir Charles Hawtrey.
Okay.
When she retired in 1925, Coley told the story of her most famous creation in the newspaper. She said, quote, "The late Charles Hawtrey was one of the best judges of cocktails that I knew. Some years ago, when he was overworking, he used to come into the bar and say, 'Coley, I am tired. Give me something with a bit of punch in it.' It was for him that I spent hours experimenting until I had invented a new cocktail. The next time he came in, I told him I had a new drink for him. He sipped it, and draining the glass, he said, 'By Jove, that's the real Hanky Panky.'"
What?
And Hanky Panky, it has been called ever since.
Oh my God. That's the real Hanky Panky? Wow.
Yes. So, so good. The way that people talked like that.
They spoke a different language back then.
Literally did. So the Hanky Panky is sort of similar to a Martinez. Martinez is basically a Manhattan made with gin instead of whiskey.
Mm.
But rather than being made with maraschino liqueur, you actually use Fernet instead.
Mm, yes.
So it's less sweet than a Martinez. It's a mixture of gin, sweet vermouth, and Fernet. Fernet, for those of you who do not know, is a bittersweet herbal Italian Amaro. It's really strong on its own. It's very herbal, very kind of minty.
Yeah.
And sort of sweet, like syrupy and bitter. And
it's an odd one.
Yeah, it is.
I don't love it.
A lot of people really don't like it at all.
And I like weird Italian shit. Like I drink Campari.
Yeah.
But yeah, Fernet is like a bridge too far sometimes.
But it's...
On its own, it's several bridges too far for
but
me.
But you use just a tiny amount.
In this.
Like for 3 ounces of liquor, you add a quarter ounce of Fernet.
Yeah, that's the right that's amount.
That's the ratio. Yeah. So let's cheers.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
we're in your beautiful new home, and I'm just like holding everything so tightly. I'm like, I don't want to ruin everything.
It's so good.
Oh, that's tasty. Yeah, I really like this.
It doesn't taste like gin, really. No. Like, you wouldn't know that there's gin in it. I guess the herbal flavors of the Fernet sort of mask the gin flavor.
Yeah, that's really, really nice.
It's equal parts sweet vermouth and gin.
Yeah. I guess it's more vermouthy.
Yeah. It's delicious.
And I think the Fernet masks the gin.
Yeah.
Like the herbalness of it.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's really, really nice.
Yeah. It's good to be back.
It's like, I feel like we took like a real break this time. Yes,
which was absolutely necessary.
So necessary. With you doing all the work for the house and like me, my move and like just my other bullshit. Like it was so nice to have time away.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we can come back swinging.
Yes. Yeah, it was really good. I felt like I was definitely neglecting things. We were in a scramble to find a new editor.
Yes.
Over the summer, and I kind of let that fall on Stephanie because I was so just overwhelmed with things in the house.
Yeah, but we got someone, a listener, like recommended a friend.
Yeah.
Like that's our new editor, and yeah, he's wonderful. So it wasn't that much of a scramble to find.
I just felt bad because I wasn't really involved in the process.
It's all right. Yeah. It's all right. We's a team.
Yes.
But yeah, I think towards the end of last season, I was just like crispy, burnt the fuck out. Yes,
absolutely.
Especially with just all of the news, the heaviness of the news at the time. Yeah, I needed a break. Mm-hmm. I needed a break from the headlines and like being so plugged in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I'm going to hop into my scandal.
Yeah, let's
my
do scandalo. This.
So I don't do enough scandals about women, even though they are my favorite. So I love the fact that this lady developed this hanky-panky cocktail. It really, it works so perfectly for my story, you don't even know.
I love that.
Yeah. So I started, of course, with Shirley Chisholm. She was my first lady story. I like set the bar on the highest shelf with her, like iconic. However, during the past 2 years, I haven't really... Well, with one exception, I focus on like the darker side of women's issues. The one exception, of course, was Woods Reedith.
Yes.
Oh, our first female president.
That was such a fun episode.
Right? It was so, so good. I like that she was just like, mind your business about who's the president. I am, bitch.
Yes.
But the other two scandals that I've done since then were Buck v. Bell, the Supreme Court decision that said that eugenics was patriotic.
Eek.
And I did Rosemary Kennedy's lobotomy, her forced lobotomy.
Good times, eugenics and lobotomies.
Yeah, so both stories had a subcurrent of just a loss of bodily autonomy for women. Thankfully, that's in the past, right, y'all?
That's not current at all.
Moving on. So in this episode, I'm returning to my old ways with the story of a young, vibrant girl growing up with a ton of autonomy. In the DC spotlight.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I know who you're doing.
Really? Yes. Okay. So she was a witty, irreverent lass who became a national celebrity at 17 years old. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Her father once said of her as a teen, "I can do one of two things. I can be president of the United States or I can attend to Alice. I cannot possibly do both."
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so fucking excited about Alice.
Yeah. So this is good old TR's... eldest daughter, Alice Roosevelt. So my scandal today is the story of the original hyper-public first kid.
Yeah.
And...
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Oh, are you? Yay!
Almost didn't do the hanky-panky because it was invented in London. So I was like, it's not American enough, but we were drinking it here.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And my story has like international.
Ooh,
yeah. So it's,
oh my God, amazing.
It's going to be so, so good. So she was, for people who don't know, you're in for a treat if you don't know anything about
this young woman. I like barely know about her. I know enough to be really excited, but I never really like looked into her that much.
Oh, this is great. So she was the sharp-tongued youngster who captured a nation's attention and their heart in the early 1900s. And she continued to make a name for herself outside of her father's presidency, like after he left the Oval Office. But first, a toast. Let us raise our glasses to one of Alice Roosevelt's most iconic quotes. It's a quote that she said so frequently that someone needle pointed it for her on a tea pillow. She said it so frequently. So her phrase was, if you can't say something good about someone, sit right by me. That was her.
Oh my God.
Right?
Oh my God. I love that.
Right?
That's one of my favorite quotes from Steel Magnolias. I had no idea it was Alice.
Yeah. Cheers.
Amazing.
When I read that, I'm like, I have to do this story for Tux.
Yes.
Like, oh my God. Needs to know where this quote that he loves so much came from.
I love Alice even more now.
She's great.
When I was doing the Hick and Eleanor story, for some reason, one of the websites that I was getting information from had mistakenly put a picture of Alice as a picture of Hick. And was basically saying Eleanor, they weren't saying that Eleanor and Alice, but was like, these two women were together and it was a picture of Alice. I'm like, that's not what Hick looked like in any way whatsoever. Yeah. And also like, you're like a historical, like whatever, you should be able to
get you should know the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. So I plan to return to Alice at some point during this season. I'm not sure if it's going to be a mini or a full episode. Because there's a lot of like related scandals. Hmm. She was just a scandalous individual, but she had major beef with Eleanor. Did you know about that?
I did know. They were not fans of one another at all.
They were politically opposite. Yeah. So I might do that, or I might do like her. She had like a very sexy affair. Ah. Yeah, it was
all the Roosevelts were.
Yeah, they were out here in these streets.
On not Grindr, the straight one.
There's a bunch. Tinder?
Tinder. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah, all the Roosevelts are up on Tinder.
Yeah, they certainly were. So let's jump into it. Alice Roosevelt, she was born the only daughter of T.R. and his first wife, Alice Hathaway Lee. Do you know anything about Alice Hathaway Lee?
No.
Okay, so 2 days after Big Alice, her mother, gave birth, and this was on Valentine's Day in 1884, she died of kidney failure that went undetected in her pregnancy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was really, really sad. And she would die on the same day as their fourth anniversary of their engagement.
Oh my God.
That's also, so bad. And also, she would die 11 hours after his mother passed of typhoid fever.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So it's like the worst day in TR's young life.
Seriously.
To be like, now you're a father.
Yeah, with no
and
mother.
And a widow. And with no mom. Yeah. Like, this is her tragic entrance into the world. And it kind of like set the tone for who she was as a person.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yikes.
So after the death of his wife and his mom, the 24-year-old TR, he threw himself into work.
God, 24 years old, too.
Yeah, 25 years old. I'm sorry. The 25-year-old TR, he threw himself into work and other pursuits because, you know, he is a man and, like, grieving is women's work.
Yeah.
So he's just going to ignore the whole thing. Strong men move on, et cetera, et cetera. So he refused to call his daughter by her name, the name that she shared with his late wife.
Because he was so hurt by...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. He called her Baby Lee throughout her whole life.
Huh.
Okay. Or Miss L.
Hmm.
Yeah. And he forbade anyone to talk about, like, Big Alice, his late wife, or talk to her about her mother.
That's not healthy for her, for this girl to
grow
up without a mother and not be allowed to talk about her.
Mm-hmm. Oof. Yeah. So it should come as no surprise that Alice's early years were really, really lonely and isolated.
Yeah.
Her mom was dead. Her father took off for his ranch in the Badlands of North Dakota. And she was left with her aunt, his sister, in New York City. Her Aunt Anna, or her Aunt Bi, she called her. Mm-hmm. And his sister was really strong and really independent. I think she was married, but like maybe her husband wasn't around a lot. She like read a lot of books. She was like a socialite, but like really educated.
Mm.
And she heavily imprinted on young Alice.
Yeah.
So he would kind of come to regret that he had his sister care for her daughter, his daughter, at such a formative time.
Maybe if you had anything to do with raising your own daughter, right? She would be different.
Yup. So TR, he would return 2 years later in 1886 to marry his high school girlfriend, his high school sweetheart. And they together would have 5 more kids.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
So the family moved from Manhattan. I think they were somewhere on like the west side in the 20s. 20th Street or something, I think.
What year would it somewhere? This,
this was 1886.
Yeah, so there wasn't, people weren't living uptown really yet.
Yeah. So they moved, him and his, I guess, 6 kids now, they moved to Long Island. And Alice hated it.
Sure.
Hated it.
Yeah, to have to move from Long Island to like go live in some like chilly mansion on, on the fucking coast.
Yeah, and she's like the like stepsister too.
Yeah.
So it's just like a really weird so vibe. Yeah. So tensions grew pretty quickly, like between her and her stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
Like she didn't like her. The stepmother didn't like her either. Like they kind of just butted heads all of the time. She was a very moody tween, apparently.
She's shopping at Hot Topic.
Yes, yes. Yeah, she was wearing a lot of eyeliner. Yeah, oh my God, Hot Topic. So she was headstrong and rebellious. She was, again, still being called Baby Lee by her dad. So that was a source of conflict, the fact that like he could call all of the other kids by their name, but she was Baby Lee, and she's the fucking eldest.
Yeah.
So she...
Dan!
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she grew kind of not hesitant. She grew distant from her dad because they're constantly having fights. And it seems like the stepmom like really just like did not like her.
Let her like go back to fucking Manhattan and live with her aunt.
Yeah, she would eventually do that.
Okay.
So she was just a source of conflict in their marriage, unfortunately. And she felt like TR preferred her half siblings.
Sure.
Because he was warmer with them.
Yeah.
Less combative.
I mean, I feel that way too.
Yeah, same. I totally get it. So a friend of her hating ass stepmom described Alice as a young wild animal that has been put into good clothes.
Shut up.
Yeah. Fuck out of here. So as a teen, her stepmom begged TR to send her to a really conservative boarding school in New York City.
You guys can't hear my eyes rolling.
Yeah. So Alice, at this time, she was living with her aunt, like having a great life, feeling free. She got wind that they were trying to send her to an awful place, and she lost her shit.
Yeah.
She wrote her dad. I think her dad might have been in D.C. at the time. She wrote her dad and said, "If you send me, I will humiliate you. I will do something that will shame you. I tell you I will."
Good.
Yeah. So he's like, okay, I'm not doing that because I want to be president someday. Like, I'm leaving this alone. You can just stay with your aunt. Bye. It's fine. He wasn't happy about it, but he's just like, whatever. I'm not going to fight her and lose, essentially.
Like, the second wife needs to shut the fuck up. She's not living there anymore.
Exactly. Well, her whole thing was like, she saw that she was, that Alice was running around with the means.
Uh-huh.
Because she was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And?
I know. Jealousy.
Yeah, right? You're just mad that you're married to some fucking stuffed shirt working in D.C. and you're stuck out in Long Island raising your kids.
Yeah. So that the day of him going, because he wanted to be president. He was the vice president at the time.
Yeah.
But it would happen faster. Like him moving into the White House would happen faster than he anticipated. Because I always forget that. TR followed the assassination of President McKinley. Yeah, your friend Leon.
Yes,
did Leon what he did. So yeah, following the assassination in 1901, the family moves into the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice is fucking thrilled.
Get them the fuck out of town.
Yeah. She loves the spotlight. She loves like being in a real city. I mean, New York.
So she moved to D.C. too?
She sure did.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She moved from New York City to D.C. and she's just like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah. Amazing.
So in her memoir, she wrote that moving into the White House was an event that she greeted with sheer rapture. Because she instantly became a celebrity at 17. Before celebrity was even really a thing.
Yeah.
This was, I guess, mass media was like coming online, driven by the middle class and their hunger for hot goss.
Yes.
And she became like the first person that newspapers declared was known for her well-knownness.
She's the first Paris Hilton.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah. She's not like an heiress, but she's kind of like, she's a socialite.
Yeah.
At such a young age.
Yeah. And like a very public.
Very public.
Celebrity socialite.
Yeah. So the newspapers, they were delighted, but also kind of annoyed by her fame because it's like, she's a kid. She's not really like doing anything. Like, why?
How old would she have been?
She was 17.
17. Okay.
When they moved into the White House.
Hot. That's great. You're right? I love that for her.
Same. So she was really outspoken and people said that she was irreverent. She didn't know her place.
Oh my God.
I know. But there were a lot of people who loved her, who started to call her Princess Alice.
Amazing.
Yeah. And of course she lived.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I'm a princess. Yeah. Like she loved every moment of it. So a teenage Alice would make her official like social debut a year after they moved into the White House. And she wore this sparkling blue gown. The color became so popular that it is still to this day known as Alice Blue.
Wow.
Yeah, I can show you a picture of it.
Yes, please.
She was, yeah, just the hottest.
I love it.
The hot shit.
That's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's very like, almost kind of like Tiffany blue.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So they say it's the color of like ice, like floating like glacial ice.
Sure. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
So this color and this dress was so popular that it inspired a song called Alice Blue Gown. I will link it in the show notes. I don't know. I can play a little bit of it now. It's kind of weird, but it's
music back then is so strange. Pop, like pop music in the late 1800s is so strange.
So weird. It's like a long ballad.
I don't like it. It's creepy.
Really?
As she felt every arm and in every shop window she prep passing by.
Okay. Right?
Yeah, it's so creepy.
It is very creepy. Okay, I thought it was just me. I'm like,
I don't know if it was just that man's voice and that recording of it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I hate it. But she was the talk of the town. Mostly because of her age and also that her behavior just really shattered gender norms.
Yeah.
The papers were following her every move and yet like mad that they were following her every move. So she became the first woman to drive 45 miles in a car from Newport to Boston.
Oh my word.
Yeah. They watched.
Drove herself.
Yeah. They watched her as she like rode through DC sometimes, most of the times alone, but other times with means.
Uh-huh. The audacity of a woman to drive her own car.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually something she shared with Eleanor. Eleanor loved to drive and drove all over the place and everybody was like,
yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. They were born in the same year. They're the same age.
Oh, that's why, yeah.
And they were really close as kids. I guess I'll get into it a little bit later. Because they both had really kind of lonely, unhappy childhoods. And they bonded in that way.
Yeah.
So she quickly established this public image of a rowdy young girl who was one part debutante, the other part tomboy, the other part just asshole. She was so disrespectful to the press.
I love it for her. I love it so much.
So she was living a really adult life at 17, and teens weren't doing the things that she was at the time, like gambling. She had a bookie.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she was gambling on horses, placing bets with bookies. She was also a huge fan of smoking. When TR saw pictures of her smoking in the newspaper, he had like a stern talk with her. And he's like, not under my roof. You're not going to be smoking in my house.
This ain't your house.
This bitch goes to the roof of the White House and starts smoking.
Oh my
it's
God,
like,
not
I'm not
under my roof.
Yes. Right.
On top of your roof.
And the newspapers lived.
Yes.
Lived. Like,
as
mega
do I.
Petty. So she was no stranger to also just being out late. The Vanderbilts, I guess, had kids her age. So she was like hanging around with them, smoking on their roofs as well.
Amazing.
the papers talked about how she slept until noon. And it's like, she's a child. Like, she's at work.
What,
like,
teenager doesn't sleep till noon?
Yeah. Like, come on. You guys just, you're just mad. But she also, I'm glad you're seated for this, she also chewed gum and wore pants.
I literally almost asked if she wore pants.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Right? And people thought, like, the Bush twins were wild. Like, this bitch was, like, doing it at 17. So in 15 months after her arrival into the White House, Alice attended 407 dinners, 350 balls, and 300 parties. How? So one paper ran a story that she she had stripped down to her lingerie at a drunken orgy at a Newport mansion and danced on top of a table. A story that proved to be false, but everyone believed it because it's like, it sounds like Alice.
Sounds like Alice.
It sounds like an 18-year-old Alice would do that.
I want it to be true for her.
I know.
She was probably like, damn it.
Yeah, that could have been me. Yeah. I could have lived even bolder. But yeah, I feel like now is time for a little breaksy.
Okie doke.
A little breaksy poo. Yeah. I'm going to have a little sip of my cocktail.
Welcome to Hashtag History. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah. And if you're a history nerd,
or even a history hater,
this is the podcast for you.
Even if history was your least favorite subject in school, we can guarantee you will like this podcast because we talk about all the things that your history textbooks did not.
Things like how the Bonnie Prince Charles and his Jacobite uprising was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, or how the pharaoh Akhenaten was so disliked by Egyptians that they literally purged his name from nearly all of their records and pretended like he had never existed.
And we do all of this while drinking and rating a custom-made cocktail specific to that week's topic.
So grab a drink, take a seat, and hang out with us each week as we learn all about history's greatest stories of controversy,
conspiracy,
and corruption.
All right, we're back.
He's back, y'all.
This drink
is so good.
It's really fucking tasty.
Yeah, I take back all of the harsh words I said about Fernet. It's really...
It just needs to be mixed into something.
Yeah.
You don't drink it on its own.
Yeah, it mixes so well.
Yeah. It's so easy. There's only three ingredients. You just stir it with some ice and strain it out.
Yeah, this is a drink that people should definitely make.
Yeah.
I mean, Fernet is a bit of an investment.
Yeah.
Unless you can find a smaller bottle.
I don't even know if they make a smaller bottle. I can't say that I've ever seen a smaller bottle. But yeah, it was not cheap.
Trash. It's really good, but you're going to have the Fernet for the rest of your life.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So maybe.
I feel like I also have Fernet in Brooklyn. So now I have two bottles of Fernet.
Thanks. Okay.
That I'm never going to finish.
No, you're definitely never going to finish two bottles. But it's okay. It's fine. So the Roosevelt kids, do you know anything about, like, their White House? They had, like, a ton of pets. Do you, like, all the pets?
Yes, I did know this. I feel like you've brought this up before.
I was talking about Laddie Boy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a ton of pets, but that's, I don't really know anything else about.
So she was known to just bring her dog around to parties, which was kind of weird at the time, just how frequently she had her pets. She had a long-haired chihuahua named Leo. He's so cute.
Oh my god.
And also a Pekingese named Manchu.
Oh my god.
Oh, they were so cute.
I love it. Chihuahuas are bastards. We were just talking about this with
Sandy. They are nasty.
They're such mean dogs. Yeah. But I feel like that's the perfect dog for Alice Roosevelt.
Absolutely. Like a dog that's going to bite you if you, like, she catches a whiff of something.
Literally, don't get too close or you're going to get your head barked off.
Yeah. She also had a pet snake. She had a snake that she brought everywhere, usually just on her arm, like as a bracelet, a garter snake.
Doing hot girl shit.
Yeah. The snake was named Emily Spinach.
Shut the fuck up.
She carried it in her dress pocket. If it wasn't on her arm, in her pocket or in her purse, and she would just be like, look what I got. Yeah.
I live.
Emily's spinach.
I love that she's like going to the dressmaker, like, this dress needs to have a pocket yes. so I can keep Emily's spinach in
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So she was named Emily after her spinster aunt that she did not like, Emily.
Okay.
And spinach after being green, like the color.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the snake was green.
The okay. snake was green. Okay. Emily spinach was a green garter snake.
That is incredible.
Right? She also always had a dagger with her in her purse and copy of the Constitution. I don't know why an 18-year-old needs a dagger, a snake, and a copy of the Constitution in her purse.
I don't know why more 18-year-olds don't carry a dagger, a snake, and a copy of the Constitution.
Oh my God.
I want this to be like the new, fuck the 90s coming back. Bring yeah. the 1890s back.
Yeah. Let's bring back garter snakes in our pouches, oh ladies. God. And daggers, because we might need it. So her father was really, really annoyed by her shenanigans. The fact that she's like bringing her snake everywhere. There's all these photos of her like smoking and like being with young men too. There was lots of photos of her with I like that you're shaking your head like, and go on.
But also, yeah, like, yes, and so yeah. shut up.
Yeah.
But also like, maybe if you'd paid attention to her when yeah. she was a kid, she wouldn't be like this.
Exactly. Maybe if you called her by her actual name a few times. And like, let her talk about her mother and like grieve appropriately, she wouldn't be like this.
But also, I'm glad she was.
I know, same. I'm so glad she was, because like, she, iconic. And this, again, this is just a foundational, this is just her as a child. Imagine her as a woman, okay?
Oh, like, she's an icon.
Yeah.
She is the moment.
She is the moment. She is the moment. T. so her father, you know, was annoyed by her shenanigans. He was most annoyed that like his stories, like the stories of his presidency and like his administration would be like below her headlines.
Yeah, because that's boring.
Thank you. Thank you. Be mad at the newspapers.
Well,
don't
be
hate
mad
the player, hate the game. Okay.
Exactly. It's not her fault that she is more interesting than you.
Thank you. So she went so far as to phone in tips about her own whereabouts to the paper so she could receive a cash reward.
Yes. Yes.
So she would later say, this is from her memoir, that I'm always on stage. All Roosevelts are exhibitionists. And she pointed to her father as the best example of this. She said of TR that this shit is so funny. He wants to be the bride at every wedding, the corpse at every funeral, and the baby at every christening.
I cannot. She's not wrong.
I know. Oh, I know. God. And I think that's why he was mad.
Sure. Because
she said this to the papers. This wasn't a memoir. This, like, she said this of him while he's president.
But he's literally yelling at her for yeah. not letting him be the center of attention. Yeah. So, like, hello.
Yeah. So she was known for her humor and her wit, because she was really well read, and she, again, was not taking shit from anyone. She's mm-hmm. like, this is who I am. Deal with it. But she was really sharp, like extra sharp with her family.
Okay.
It seems like she kind of tormented them.
I would too.
Yeah.
Look at how she was raised.
Yeah. Yeah. And like.
Payback. Payback's a bitch.
Yeah. Her cousin, her youngest half sister, Ethel, and the rest of the family, apparently they agreed that she was a quote, hellion, capable of doing almost anything to anyone at any time. But you're the youngest, and like maybe she really got you, but
yeah, I was gonna say sister. It's not really fair to treat your half siblings like that because you're mad at your dad and your
yeah.
stepmom.
Yeah.
But at the same time, those kids were her stepmom's kids, and I'm sure the stepmom was feeding them all
Absolutely.
Kinds of bullshit.
Yeah.
And they probably were awful to her.
Yeah. Yeah, her stepmom like called her names and like was just really mean to her.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm sure that her step siblings were also terrible to her because
yeah.
of the way the mom was.
Yeah, you know no, definitely. I mean? Yeah, she was setting the tone for like what's acceptable.
So they yeah. fucking got what they deserved.
Yeah. However, Eleanor Roosevelt really didn't deserve the fire that she spit at her often.
Yeah. yeah.
So they were really, really, really close as kids, mm-hmm. like sisters almost.
Yeah.
Because they were born like months apart. I think Eleanor's father is like TR's youngest sibling, like their first cousins.
Eleanor's
Elliot.
F- father was yeah was TR's.
Yeah. So they were first cousins and they like grew up together. Was Eleanor in Long Island?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's why they were close, I think.
Yeah. And her mom was still alive, but she was terrible to Eleanor. Yeah. So she was also really lonely and sad as a kid.
Yeah. They were like two sad, like lonely bookish girls together when they were growing up. But as adults, they had public beef, like really out in the open. They had rival columns kind of talking about each other. Oh my God. Yes. This might be a mini. I'm unsure what story I want to tell. Maybe I'll tell both of the stories. It's like she's just such a messy, delightful person.
Yeah. I feel like it kind of almost makes more sense to me now that they didn't like each other because
their politics were so different too.
Well, their politics were different, but they were also such very, very different people. But when they were so close as children, I feel like Eleanor probably resented her a lot. A, for being famous, and B, for being beautiful, because Eleanor was neither.
Yeah. Alice talked about her looks and like she didn't need to do that. That's
a low blow.
Yeah. She had the most to say about FDR. She was not a fan. Yeah. At one point she said she'd rather vote for Hitler than him.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Okay.
She said that.
Get a grip, Alice.
Yeah. Yeah. She was out there. This is a quote of her about FDR, that he is 1/3 mush, 2/3 Eleanor.
She's not wrong. Right? I mean, his presidency was 1/3 mush and 2/3 Eleanor.
Right? She's honest.
Yeah.
But she's saying things that are true, but like you shouldn't really say them into a microphone.
I also do think that the Long Island Roosevelts really looked down on the Hudson Valley Roosevelts. Franklin was the Hudson Valley Roosevelt.
Oh, and the fifth cousin.
Yeah, and Eleanor and Alice were Long Island Roosevelts. Long Island,
formerly New York.
Yeah, and Roosevelts. So they all sort of were New York based, both sides of the family.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
But like one went up and one went out, you know. And so when Eleanor married into the Hudson Valley Roosevelts, I feel like the TR side, everyone was like,
like a step down.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. It's like, whatever.
They're all rich and they're all Roosevelts.
Thank you. Yeah. Y'all are the same. Yeah. Like, it's weird that you're being clannish within a clan.
And like, Hyde Park is such a dump. Grow up.
Yeah. Come now. So she was not a fan of religion either and like was very vocal. She said on numerous occasions to the press that Christianity is, quote, sheer voodoo. And this was a time when everyone was Christian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you weren't, you shut up about it.
Yeah.
So she was openly, like, self-described pagan.
What?
Yes.
Pagan.
Yeah, a pagan in, like, 1909. A pagan.
Running around with a dagger and a snake.
I mean, that kind of fits, right?
I live.
Right? Isn't she incredible? I'm like, Tux is going to love this story.
I already knew that I loved her, but I love her so much more now.
Yeah. And her family was horrified. It's like, girl, you can't be saying that you're a pagan.
Your dad's trying to be president.
Come on.
Or, well, I guess he is president.
Yeah. Currently president, and you're saying this. So she was really political too, obviously, because like, again, you can't tell her nothing.
Yeah.
And like, she's in DC. People are following her with microphones. Like, she's going to say something that's like political and people are going to be upset. I mean, people were upset about the Hitler thing, but that was later. Later.
Yeah. I'm upset about the Hitler thing.
I'm upset about the Hitler thing as well. But she...
Was she really, like, snobbish and, like, aristocratic?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes, she was. She most certainly was.
Which is, again, why I think she and Eleanor butted heads so much.
Yeah. Yeah, she was definitely into just, like, the appearances of things.
Sure.
And, like, just looking at Eleanor, like... And like being related to her so closely, I think bothered her.
Sure. I get that. I mean,
it's like you're fucking up my brand.
Exactly.
So she had a lot of spicy opinions and they were not well received by most people. Alice was known to interrupt her father in the Oval Office. Yeah. Just like barge in during meetings, sometimes with her fucking snake. Often trying to involve herself in the political process. This became such a frequent thing that TR was asked, like, what the fuck is your daughter doing with her snake? Like, wanting to give her opinions. And this is when he said, like, I can do one of two things. I can be president of the United States, or I can attend to Alice. I cannot possibly do both.
This is the best story, right? I've ever heard.
So to get his troublesome daughter of his own making, like, out of his hair,
he lobotomized her.
No, oh my God. Could you imagine if I did that to you guys? I'm just like, this story is going to be great. Bodily autonomy. She's so free. Look at her go. Whee! No, she's not. She's not. They don't do that to her. They don't do her that way, thankfully. But could you imagine it?
Oh my God.
You would be distraught.
I would pass away.
Yeah. So he sent her on a diplomatic thing to Asia. She's like, you need to just go away from the press for a while. And also he loved the fact, he had a love-hate relationship with the fact that she was so popular. Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted good press, and also he wanted to get his daughter kind of away from the DC press.
Sure.
They're like, okay, you be international. Mm-hmm. It'll be cool. But the joke was on him because, like, Alice is Alice anywhere she goes.
Of course she's
going
to go be Alice anywhere. Yeah,
anywhere, everywhere. So this trip was in 1905. She was joined by congressmen, some of which were kind of young and sexful.
Ooh la la.
Yeah, so oh she God. Was a... ooh la la. She was a like a goodwill ambassador. That was like her title of the administration. And she was the first daughter to be in that role.
Okay.
Previously, it had been like first sons would go off to some faraway land as a representative for the administration.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, it was a pretty successful trip because of her popularity.
Yeah.
However, there was scandal because Alice is Alice.
Yeah, yeah.
And at one point, I guess they were en route to Japan. She jumped into the ship's swimming pool fully clothed. And then begged, like, another young congressman to jump in with her. So there's pictures and the press, they kind of twisted the story. So the guy that she dared to jump to the pool with her was a congressman named William Burke Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he obliged. It's like this hot, I think she was 19 at the time.
Yeah.
And gorgeous. So yeah. Like, he's going to do whatever she says. But the newspapers, they put a romantic spin on the story because she was engaged at the time to her fiance, a man named Nicholas Longworth III. And it was not him in that pool.
Of course, Alice Roosevelt Longworth. Yes.
Yeah. It was not him in that pool. But the press, they said that it was.
Yeah.
To, you know, save her honor or whatever. So she and Longworth, they had traveled in the same social circles for a while. Like, he was a rich dude from like a good family in Ohio, actually.
Bringing it back.
That's why I did this story. Yeah. For the one mention of Ohio. Wow. No. So he was the son of a socially prominent Ohio family, but he was 14 years her senior. Okay. So that was a little scandalous, but like not super super uncommon. But he was also a notorious playboy.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So they returned to D.C. in December of 1905, and they quickly wed. They got married in February of the following year.
Okay.
And of course, it was the social event of the season.
Of course, yes.
It was at the White House, of course, because, I mean, they could have done it in Long Island at their estate, but she's like, I want to be where the press is.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there were over 1,000 people at their wedding and thousands more outside trying to just get a glimpse of her. Of course, she wore a blue dress, a blue wedding dress, not a white dress.
That wasn't always a given.
Oh, was it not?
No, it didn't come. Well, I guess I think it was starting in the Victorian era when more and more people started wearing white.
Oh, okay.
So it probably was very common by...
1906.
It was probably really common, but it wasn't like always everyone wore white.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did not know that. So she had this beautiful blue dress. There's lots of photos of it. She also cut her wedding cake with a sword.
Because, yes, she did.
Because Alice. Uh-huh. Because why not?
Amazing.
So the couple, they bought this fancy house in D.C. because she just loved D.C.
Sure.
in DC loved her. Yeah. She wasn't going anywhere. But she was never at her fancy house. She was always at the Capitol or the White House. According to her memoirs, on May 11th, 1908, she was at the Capitol for some giggles, where she frequently was. And there was a guy that she did not really like, a congressman who's nameless. But she writes about placing a tack on his chair of a unknown middle-aged dignified gentleman, she called him. And this is from her memoir. She described that, like the burst of a bubble on the fountain, like the bolt from the blue, like a ball from the cannon, the unfortunate fellow leapt up in pain and surprise while I looked away. So this is 22-year-old Alice still just like having, you know, having some fun.
Yes.
Having some fun at the expense of straight white men. Like, who can be mad at that? So following her dad's defeat in 1912, when it came time for the Roosevelt family to move out of the White House, Alice is really upset. Mm-hmm. Even though she doesn't live there anymore, technically. Yeah. So she buried a voodoo doll of the First Lady, Nellie Taft, in the front yard. Later, the Taft White House banned her from ever appearing at her former residence. And this was not the first. This was the first administration to do so, but not the last. She was banned again by the Wilson White House because she was really against just like foreign intervention. She really hated Wilson's League of Nations.
Okay.
So she, because the press just flocked to her, she did what she could to like ruin the League of Nations and like turn people against it. So she was banned from that White House as well. But she was so happy when the treaty was struck down. She actually like celebrated.
Yeah. Oh, Alice.
Yeah. So Alice knew every president from Benjamin Harrison to Jimmy Carter. And she maintained her status attending White House receptions through 18 administrations. Yeah, she was like Nixon visited her on her birthday in D.C.
Amazing.
Yeah. And she said of Johnson that she wore big hats so he wouldn't kiss her. So, yeah.
What a great strategy.
Yeah, it worked. It worked.
I love it.
So her wit and her just very sharp tongue, and I'm going to be getting into this more in the next scandal that I knew about her. She just had a lot of one-liners that were just gold nuggets out of her mouth that always targeted like the sitting president.
I love her so much. Right? Oh my God.
Yeah, she was a political force in a time when women didn't even have the power of the vote yet.
Yeah.
She got the vote. Her and Eleanor got the vote when they were 36.
She kind of gives me like Princess Margaret a little bit. If you've ever watched The Crown, like she was like the playboy or playgirl.
Yeah. Dating a married black sheep. Man.
Yeah. I feel like if they did an American version of The Crown, but with the Roosevelts,
they should.
That would be such a good show.
She had all of the scandal and she had a lot of affairs herself. Oh man. She lived a fucking life. She lived until, I want to say she was in her 90s.
Wow.
Yeah. She was in her 90s.
Just rocking big hats to keep Johnson away.
Yeah. Yeah. So historically, she is known for just having her own life in the face of like Washington, D.C. scrutiny. And celebrity kind of followed all future kids. But she kind of had this, she was the model of someone being like, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm going to wear pants and chew gum. Fuck
yeah.
You.
Yeah.
Drive a this car is, and
welcome. Meet Emily Spinach. Okay.
I like need a movie or a show or something about her.
Same. But yeah, at the end, that's like,
incredible. I have not smiled so much during a recording of this show in a very long time.
I felt like we needed this story.
Yes.
It felt a little light and fluffy, but I'm like, people don't know about her.
Yeah.
I knew bits, like drips and drabs about her. I knew that she had beef with Eleanor, that she was like the sexy cousin who was kind of like a prima donna, but I didn't know the half of it.
Yeah.
I knew
that they had beef and I knew that she was like a thorn in TR's side, but I didn't really know all the reasons.
But it's really interesting, like, TR, a lot of the beef, well, not a lot of the beef, I mean, she had problems with Eleanor that were just, a lot of it was political, mm-hmm. and also just how she looked.
Yeah.
But TR loved Eleanor, and yeah. I think there was a little jealousy there.
Sure. That makes sense, too. Yeah, that does make sense.
He was her favorite niece, Eleanor.
Well, because, you know, Eleanor, her father died. He was an alcoholic, and he died, I feel like, cirrhosis or something. So I feel like TR really looked after her a lot.
Yeah.
Which I completely could understand why Alice was pissed about that.
Yeah. She had a lot to be pissed about.
Sure, of course.
A lot to be pissed about. But she lived a remarkable life. She was kind of on the wrong side of some history, in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she was a Republican. Die hard. That was her side of the family. And she was really, really, really anti-New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, kind of judged Eleanor for being wealthy, but, like, caring about the poor. She was confused by that.
Yeah, they're
she's just like, stop putting it on.
Yeah, like, they're a very aristocratic family.
Yeah.
And for Eleanor to be like, no, I care about other people and the way other people live.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of the Roosevelts just didn't get it.
Like, yeah.
But why?
Yeah.
You don't want to maintain our way of life as, you know.
Yeah. Well, Alice was saying, I guess, saying what the other family was thinking.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because there was always a mic in front of her.
Yeah. Oh.
She's like, and another thing.
I feel like this is like whenever we find these people that are amazing and we love, there's always some questionable politics that's like.
Of course.
The doing the needful.
What? Oh, Gouverneur.
Gouverneur Morris.
Gouverneur Morris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He had terrible politics, but he was pro, just amazing.
Yeah. Oh, God. Amazing. So fun.
But yeah. Called
what did he call
poor people? What, insects or something like that?
Oh, yeah. I took out something from my outline. Yeah. I want to say she called people like unwashed or something.
Yeah. I mean, that tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were American royalty.
I was just about to say, yes, that's exactly what they were.
Yeah.
Like before the Kennedys, they were like a political dynasty.
Yeah.
So we can't be shocked by their points of view because they had so much power. I mean, she had so much power as a 17-year-old girl.
Wild.
Yeah. Smoking on top of the White House.
I live. Yeah. I love it.
So good.
Thank you for telling that. I needed a fun story. Yeah. My story coming up in a couple weeks is not terrible, terribly like bummer.
Yeah.
But it's not fun this. So I'm really glad that this was such a good way to start the season.
I think we needed this.
Yeah.
Absolutely. At least I needed this.
Especially after the summer we've had.
Yeah. We needed a break. And also, people don't know about her, and they should.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yay. All right. Yeah, my cocktail, I have one more sip.
I'm literally just about to drown my last sip.
So good.
That's it.
Yeah, that's really, really good. Yeah, I'd have another of these.
Yeah, our next cocktail is not going to be so good. My story coming up in a couple weeks is from the 70s, so... brace yourselves.
Yeah. It's going to have a sexy name. I'm going to have to roll my eyes. Yeah. Or was that the 80s? The 80s had this.
Sort of. They started in the 70s. This one actually doesn't have a sexy name, but it's just not going to be as good as this. This one has a sexy name.
Yeah. Hanky Panky. Oh, my God. That's Hanky Panky. What, sir?
I know. Did that mean something else back then?
It must have.
Yeah.
It must have.
Thank you for telling that. That's great.
No, it was a joy. But the only thing now, it's like, it's hard to choose a next story because there's so many.
Yeah.
Because she was the epitome of a scandal.
The epitome.
The epitome of a scandal.
Well, that was a delight.
Oh, yes.
Our drinks are empty. So we're done. America's history is juicy. We just add gin and vermouth and Fernet.
Vernet.
A whole big ass bottle of Fernet that will never.
Y'all, empty if you itself. Need some Fernet, we can send it to you in the mail.
Seriously. Yeah.
Write us.
I know.
Seriously. No, honestly.
We have so much.
If you need some, we'll find a way to get it to you.
Literally, you only need a half an ounce to two cocktails.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach season 5.
Oh my God. Very exciting. So we have never had a proper launch party. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, we have to do something for our fifth. When did we start? In May?
It would have been in October or something. Like the first episode, I feel like, aired.
You're right. It was in the fall.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We'll find it.
Yeah. We'll do something.
We'll do something. Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Lurzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
And thank you to our new audio editor, Dev. We couldn't do this without you. All right, guys. Bye.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.